All of us in the room, we don't like it when someone is untrue. When somebody does something that we feel like they've betrayed us, they haven't lived up to what we expected. We feel like they were fake or false. And sometimes we can hold those resentments for a while. And when I was 11 or 12, I was spending a night at a buddy's house, and felt like somebody was untrue to me and held on to that for years, like resenting this kid named Joe, this black-haired kid. I can still picture him with his spiky hair and everything. And I couldn't find a picture of Joe because we didn't wind up being very good friends because of this, but found a picture of a couple other guys we were with. So this is nerdy middle school Jake over on the far left, and there with Corey and Rob, who were my best friends at the time. And I was over at Corey's house with Rob and this Joe guy, who I didn't know for very long. But because we're 12-year-old boys, we started wrestling at some point. I don't know how that happened, but we're fighting each other, and it's me and Joe versus Corey and Rob, the other two guys up there. And I've got Corey pinned, which is good for me in a physical encounter to have the upper hand on anyone. Poor Corey, you know, like it really reflects poorly on Corey. But Rob is the biggest and strongest of the four of us by far. So he has like Joe in some sort of headlock thing, and Joe is like wailing, like, "Jake, help, help." So I let go of Corey and I go and like tackle Rob, and then pretty soon like Rob is on top of me, and then Corey's on top of me, and Joe is sitting on the couch. And I resented him for years just for that. I'm like, "What? Like I saved you and then you just turned on me, you know?" So we all don't like people like that, though, right? That when things are hard, they're untrue in some way. The terrible thing is we're all like that at different points, you know? And middle school wrestling is not such a big deal, but I can think of lots of examples in my own life where the pressure is on and I fail in some way and I feel ashamed, right? Even here, when Chrissy and I hadn't been married for very long, I was here at Maywood, though, and had someone tell me one of those terrible, like, "I told you this, but you need to not tell anyone else about it." You know, sometimes I hate those things, but I said okay to that person. And then the thing they had told me about, that news of that broke to everybody that later that day. So my wife came to me later that day and told me, "Did you hear that this thing happened?" And I felt really like, I don't know what to do in this moment. I told him I wouldn't say that I knew about it. Now I'm hearing about it. So I acted surprised and was deceptive to Chrissy. Like later that day, like apologized about it and had been deceptive about it and didn't even apologize very well. So I had to clean that mess up even, you know, but I felt terrible about it, right? I got myself in this bind of I'm trying to juggle several things and I messed it up. And the thing we're going to read about today, it's a very famous story from the Bible, John 18 and 19, about how does this all go down with Jesus going to the cross. And there's some people that are very easy to vilify because they act like villains in these chapters. Don't just listen as we read all this and say, "Oh yeah, Pilate and those high priests, like they're terrible." I want you to keep looking in your own life and say, "How have I acted like that too?" You won't get anything out of today if you're not real with yourself, okay? So here's the people we're going to be talking about today. There's three different kind of groups. One is Pilate. He is the Roman governor. He's got the governmental power, and he's trying to hold on to power as this whole story plays out. He doesn't want a riot on his hands, and he's trying to hold on to peace and power. We've got the high priest here, Caiaphas, and some other Jewish leaders, religious leaders, and they have a pride about them that they know God and that Jesus is messing it up and has to be stopped. So that's their position, this prideful position. And then we have Jesus, who's the only one who is true throughout this whole chapter. As we read it, you'll see that. Okay? And as amazing as Jesus is, I want you, as we read this stuff, to see how am I like Pilate? How have I acted like that in my own life, okay? How am I like these high priests? So we're going to jump into chapter 18 of John, starting in verse 33. And Pilate has got Jesus. He's been arrested by the Jewish leaders, and they've brought him to Pilate. They're asking for him to be crucified. So Pilate, it says, went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" That was the claim that the Jewish leaders were using to try to get him killed, because the Roman government, they had Caesar. They didn't treat other people who claimed to be king well. So that was what the Jewish leaders had brought as the charge. "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked. "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" Pilate can already see through. Like, the Jewish folks, culturally, they weren't real big on trying to protect Caesar's authority, okay? So the fact that the leaders have brought somebody on this case, like, he's trying to get to the bottom of it, see what's really going on. Verse 36, Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." Verse 37, "You are a king then," said Pilate. Pilate's still trying to kind of get the facts together. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." So there's these two paths. There's the side of truth that involves listening to Jesus. Then there's the other path, right? We're gonna read a big chunk of scripture here. We're going to get a great insight into Pilate's view of the world in this very next line, okay? So Jesus talks about who he is. So Pilate's response, "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. With this, he went out again to the Jews gathered there and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him." So we get to see a lot about what does Pilate care about. Jesus starts talking about, "I'm true, on the side of truth," and Pilate rejects that as like, real truth with like a capital T, like, means nothing to Pilate. Pilate is a political person. He is trying to hold all these different things in balance to hold on to power. And so whatever facts are there that he can use to keep things the way that he wants them, that's what he's concerned about. So he's talking to Jesus, trying to gain some more information so he can make this play out the way he wants it to. So right off the bat, Pilate doesn't believe in truth. He believes in trying to manipulate things to get him to play out the way he wants. And we can look at it and think, what a jerk. You remember what we talked about at the beginning of the sermon, right? How are you like that? Also, notice about Pilate. Pilate doesn't want to crucify Jesus. He sees that this guy's probably innocent, right? So he goes out and says, "I don't find any reason for this guy to have any charge, much less the death penalty." So he's trying to do the right thing. Maybe you see that in your own life too. Try to do the right thing. Verse 39, he has a plan. He's crafty, Pilate. He has a plan on how to get everything he wants. He says, "It's your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of Passover," which that is when this is happening. "Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" So Pilate thinks, here's a great loophole. Like, I'm so smart. I figured it out, how I can keep everyone happy. We have this tradition where we let a criminal off. How about we just let this Jesus guy off? He's not really even guilty of anything. Everyone will go home. Be happy. You ever been between a rock and a hard place, and your solution is, I'm going to think my way out of it. I'm going to come up with a thing that everyone's going to be happy when they hear my idea. Verse 40, they shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now, Barabbas had taken part in an uprising. So his first crafty plan flies right back in his face, like, that didn't work. Doesn't stop him from trying more. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. So here's, Pilate's a person of action. Pilate says, well, my first real nice way didn't work. We got a bloodthirsty crowd that's really angry out here. I'm going to give them a piece of what they want, try to pacify them. I'm not going to execute Jesus. I will just take and have him brutally, like, tortured. And once they've seen I've beaten him up and he's learned his lesson, like, then we can all go home. So he's trying to meet them halfway. If you look at your own life, have you ever tried to make deals with bad people, try to meet them halfway? I'm not going to go as far as they want, but I got to go, I got to give them a little bit, right? So that's what Pilate does here. Now the soldiers twist together a crown of thorns and put it on Jesus' head. They clothe them in a purple robe. Maybe you can sympathize with Pilate too. Pilate's not intending that they do even more. The soldiers he has working for him, they take it a step further and start mocking Jesus, right? They went up to him again and again and said, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they slapped him in the face. Verse 4 of chapter 19, once more Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, "Look, I'm bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." So he's saying, this guy's innocent, but we just beat him within an inch of his life, like ripped him apart, right? And Pilate is thinking, now that they've seen we've really been harsh on him, now it'll all end, right? When Jesus comes out, he doesn't come out probably the way that Pilate would have expected. It says, when Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." And I can just think for Pilate, like he's super stressed, and he's trying to downplay the whole situation, and then his guards have dressed Jesus up like a mock king. Stupid guards, like no one is quite doing things the way Pilate wants, right? He's trying to manipulate it, and it's all going bad. Can you relate to that? Have you ever tried, and you try, and you compromise, and you keep trying, and everything seems to be pushing you to that decision you don't want to make? Verse 6, as soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify, crucify." But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." He's kind of a broken record here, but he's getting more passive, right? He's wanting to just say, "I don't even want to deal with it." Have any of you ever been in a spot where you've been responsible, but you've gotten to the spot of saying, like, "I don't even want to make a decision. I just want to get away"? That's where Pilate's at right here. Verse 7, the Jewish leaders insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God." Now a little bit more of the truth starts to come out with why are the Jewish leaders doing this. They said it was because he insulted Caesar, but really they're saying it's because this guy claimed to be God. So even the high priest and these other folks, they're not being totally honest with what's going on, right? They're trying to manipulate too. Pilate hears that, hears this guy that answered him so strangely, claiming to be God. When Pilate heard this, he's even more afraid. I want this to kind of be the halfway point of what we're talking about today. When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. It doesn't tell us anywhere earlier in the passage about Pilate being afraid, right? I think John comes out here and just says, let me tell you real clearly what's going on. Because if you just look at the scene, like we did earlier, it's easy to say, well, Pilate wants power, and that's why he's doing what he wants, or is doing. And the Jewish leaders, they have this pride, and that's what's driving them. But the real thing driving Pilate is fear. He's afraid of what is going to happen. He's afraid of a riot. He's afraid of losing all that power. So that fear drives him, even though on the surface it seems like he's after power, the real thing driving him is fear. The Jewish leaders, we're not going to go back all the way back into John to see this, but earlier in John, Caiaphas is talking about, if we don't stop Jesus, we're going to lose our temple, we're going to lose all this stuff we care about. He's afraid of what will happen if Jesus continues to be successful. And he gets to the conclusion, we got to kill him. That's where his fear drives him. Is I got to kill this person. If you didn't read John closely, you wouldn't see fear as the motivator for these two groups. And if you haven't looked at your own life closely, you might not see how fear has driven you to do some terrible things. Maybe you say, oh, it's because I was really angry, because that person disrespected me. But if you pull back the layers, but the deepest voice inside of you was fear. What have you done that you're ashamed of that at the heart of it was about fear? Because here's what fear drives these two other groups to do. They try to control it. The high priests try to control what's going to happen. Pilate does all these different little maneuvers to try to control what's going to happen. Because when you're driven by fear, then the response is to try to control things, right? Jesus is not driven by fear. And the way he handles this whole chapter, these two chapters, he doesn't try to control the outcomes because he believes that God is in control. Let's see how that plays out in this next conversation. Pilate went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus, but Jesus gave him no answer. This is how he's different than the folks that are driven by fear. If you are driven by fear, you don't stop talking. You don't say like, "Well, no, I've said enough." When you're driven by fear, you're always trying more. Control, massage, manipulate. Jesus at this point has said, "I've said all I need to say. Like, I told you my kingdom is not from this world. I told you I'm on the side of truth. I told you, like, all these, everything I need to say, I already told you." The peace that Jesus has is really unsettling to Pilate. And if you walk through your life with the peace that God has, when you're trusting that he's good, that you trust the outcomes to him, it's going to be unsettling to the people around you. "Wait, what? How are you acting this way?" Look how Pilate responds. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" He's back to the power thing because he's even more afraid because Jesus isn't afraid. Pilate, this commander of this giant Roman army, is afraid. And Jesus, whose blood is dripping on the stones in that palace, is not afraid. Pilate says, "Don't you realize my power?" He's holding so tight to his power because he's afraid. Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." There's a lot we could go into with this verse. Here's the thing I want to point out right now. Jesus is saying here, "I trust the outcome to God." If you trust the outcome to God, you handle trouble a totally different way. You're worried about, am I doing right by God? Not how's it going to turn out, not what's going to happen, not am I going to still be in control, or am I going to still have all I want? It's just, am I going to do this right according to God? Because God's going to take care of the outcome. Verse 12, "From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jewish leaders kept shouting, 'If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar.'" So he's still trying to do the right thing, but he's sounding pretty powerless, right? Verse 13, "When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at the place known as the stone pavement," which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. Goes and gets into a position, a physical position of power, because he's struggling, right? He's trying to prop himself up. "It was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about noon. 'Here is your king,' Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, 'Take him away, take him away, crucify him.' 'Shall I crucify your king?' Pilate asked. 'We have no king but Caesar,' the chief priest answered." If you knew, or maybe you do, know a lot about Jewish culture in that period, they were not big fans of Caesar. Like, this is not true. They don't really believe that in their hearts, but they're willing to say whatever they need to say to try to get what they think they need. Have you been there before, right? Verse 16, "Finally, Pilate handed them over to be crucified." Here's the thing I want to focus on with this verse. This is our last verse. That word, "finally." Maybe you can relate to Pilate today because you can think of all these different times in your life where you tried to do the right thing. You tried so hard over and over and over and over to do the right thing. Think about what actually happened because of all Pilate's efforts. Some sort of rebellious criminal like is out on the streets. Maybe much more importantly, I would say, Jesus got flogged. You've seen the movie The Passion of the Christ? It's just crazy shredding of his skin and his muscle. The Jewish leaders didn't even ask for that. Like, they just wanted to put him on a cross and kill him. I mean, which is torture in and of itself. But all of Pilate's good intentions actually made it worse for Jesus. If you look back at your own life, and some of the times when in your own strength, you tried to juggle kind of doing the right thing and half-stepping, I bet you made it worse for Jesus. I bet you made it a harder situation with your half-stepping. If Pilate had just been a mean, cruel jerk and said, yeah, put him on a cross, kill him if that'll make you happy, it would have actually been easier on Jesus. It's not that Pilate would have been a better person, but it's Pilate at his best was still a mess. And we, at our best, without Jesus, we are going to make a mess of things. That's all Pilate does, is make things worse. And the truth of the matter is, all we're going to do is make things worse. We don't have Jesus working through us. Last image before we go to the Lord's Supper. Jesus on the cross. Jesus is still doing right, even as he's hanging on the cross. If you'll read the rest of John 19. And at the end, or towards the end of that time, he's able to say, it's finished. I've accomplished what I was sent to accomplish. Fear never gets you to a place where you can say, I'm finished. Never gets you to a place where you can say, this thing's done. Pilate and the high priests, they're still bickering over the sign above Jesus' head. They're still trying to manipulate and maneuver because fear never rests. And if you're driven by fear, you'll never be satisfied. I'm going to invite the deacons to come up. As we take the Lord's Supper today, some of you, this might be the first time you've ever done it. You might not understand all the details. Let me run through fairly quickly what this is about. Jesus died on the cross. He said, I'm going to sacrifice my body and my blood so that people can have new life in me. If you're here today and you're saying, I can't do my life on my own, Jesus, I need you to live through me, then I want to invite you to participate in this. Because that's what we're doing. We're saying physically, I want Jesus inside of me, and I want to live for him. And so the little bit of bread we're going to have, that represents Jesus' body. The little bit of juice we're going to have, that represents his blood. We're going to read a passage from John chapter 6 where Jesus himself describes, what does this all mean? Honestly, it's a confusing passage, because it takes faith to really accept Jesus, okay? So the deacons are going to come around here in just a second. They're going to hand you this tray. Take both cups out of it. Bread and juice kind of nested together. And then you can wait for me. I'll give us an example kind of when to do this stuff. But what you're doing when you take this bread and you take this drink, you're saying, Jesus, I want your sacrifice inside of me. I want to live for you. So if you're serious about that today, then we invite you, let's do that together. So let me open us in prayer. Jesus, you have done all that we couldn't do. Jesus, I myself will confess, I make a mess of a thing without you. Jesus, in a fresh way today, I want to say, I need you. I need you to live through me so I can be true. Thank you for your grace. In your name we pray.